Chapter 7. It was a lonely Christmas, but no worse perhaps than any other spent in captivity, and at least they had one another for company. After 12 cold and hungry nights, Donald and Owen were finally released to their rooms in the Gate Tower. Hugh, however, found himself hauled off for another interview with the Lord Deputy. "And right well he knows where to look for the ringleader in this business," said Seagar. "You've been nothing but trouble since the day you arrived here. You'll be lucky if you escape with a beating this time. If I were the Lord Deputy, I'd throw you into one of the underground dungeons in the Grate, leave you there to rot,
and bring the northern clans down about your ears like a hornet's nest," jeered Hugh. "You are a fool, Seagar. Fitzwilliam dare not punish me. My father and Hugh MacFerdina learn of everything that passes here. They would make a noose out of his own gut for the man who laid a hand on me." It was a comforting boast, but not very truthful, and Hugh knew it. Despite his bravado, he had a battle to hide his fear when he was ushered into the Lord Deputy's presence. But Fitzwilliam, it seemed, was in a generous mood. He greeted the boy with a smile and beckoned him forward, waving Seagar back to wait by the door. The Lord Deputy, seated behind a huge oak table, had someone with him. Miller McGrath, the Archbishop of Cashel. McGrath had been a Catholic before he had seen the light and been well rewarded for his conversion to Protestantism. The Archbishop smiled at his young countryman. Hugh scowled.
"Be seated, Master O'Donnell," invited the Lord Deputy.
Hugh looked at the low stool, deliberately placed, he suspected, so that the two men would be able to look down at him. He debated whether to refuse it, but decided it wasn't worth the effort, and sat. The Lord Deputy leaned back in his chair and studied him, much as one might look at a puppy presented for inspection. Hugh stared back. If Perrault had looked like a bull, then Fitzwilliam, he decided, was a fox, nervous and fussy, with sharp eyes and a shrewd, narrow face. He remembered what Hugh MacFerdina had said about the man, that he was not wealthy, and might therefore be bribeable. Was it true? Did those eyes reflect greed, or only meanness? Finally, as Fitzwilliam continued to stare at him, Hugh's curiosity turned to anger. "Is there something amiss with my face, Lord Deputy?" he demanded. "Have I leprosy, perhaps? Or the first signs of smallpox?" Fitzwilliam only smiled.
"On the contrary, Master O'Donnell, it is a very pleasing face. Well favoured and intelligent. I can see why your father sets such store by you."
"Then why do you keep me a prisoner in your castle when I should be at his side?"
"Come now, Master Hugh, we've been through this. It was not I who sent that ship to Loch Swilly."
"But it's you who keeps me here. Does that make you any less guilty?"
"Enough." Fitzwilliam was starting to lose his patience. "You are here by Her Majesty's command. You know as well as I do, the custom of hostage is a perfectly legal one. Does not your own father take pledges of hostages from his chieftains?"
"Not by abduction. I am not a pledge, I'm a prisoner."
"You draw a fine distinction."
"I do not. Hugh MacFerdina gives pledges last time he came to Dublin. Were they locked up in the Gate Tower and threatened with chains if they caused trouble? No. They are lodged in the city, but only their word to hold them there." Fitzwilliam pretended to consider the statement.
"And would you give your word if it was asked of you?"
"Would you take it if I gave it?" The Lord Deputy did not answer, and Hugh knew that he had won this round. Archbishop McGrath broke the silence, folding his hands over his Book of Common Prayer, which lay on the table in front of him. He said, speaking in Latin for Fitzwilliam's benefit,
"I was grieved, Master O'Donnell, to learn that you and your friends had refused spiritual consolation."
It took Hugh a moment to realise what he was talking about. It was hardly the way he would have described the Christmas fiasco.
"We've not refused it, Master McGrath," he said coldly. "We've denied it."
"Indeed, that's not how it was told to me, but if it's true, it can soon be remedied."
"You mean, we may have a priest to say Mass for us?"
"Indeed, I do not. I mean, there are many good churchmen in Dublin who would be pleased to instruct you in the true faith."
"We do not want your heresies. We want our own Mass." "You're being stubborn, boy," broke in Fitzwilliam. And it is your popish mass that is the heresy, blasphemy, garbled in some ununderstandable language.
I do not find Latin ununderstandable.
Perhaps not, but you have been taught to speak it. But what of your simpler clansmen? Of what benefit are those books read in a language they can't even understand?
Hugh stared at him. Was the man really as stupid as he appeared? He stretched a hand across the table.
Show me the notes you use for your services, he demanded of McGrath.
The Archbishop handed him his prayer book. Hugh opened it. He turned a couple of pages and then held it up triumphantly to Fitzwilliam.
You see, he said, it's all in English.
The Lord Deputy looked confused.
Well, of course it is. What did you expect?
Mother of God, this was worse than trying to teach a six-year-old.
My clansmen, those simple folk who do not speak Latin. They don't speak English either, and neither do I.
Light dawned in Fitzwilliam's eyes. He smiled.
You're not ashamed of your arrogance. What opportunity have you had to learn better, or your countrymen, living in your remote and savage caveman lives like you do? But all that is going to change. It is Her Majesty's greatest wish that you should be taught and civilized.
Civilized? And is it her belief that to speak English is to be civilized?
Of course. That's the start of it, at least. With the language comes the customs and the manners. Once you understand our ways, you'll see how much better they are. We will teach you to build proper houses and towns and...
I am going to scream, thought Hugh. It is like beating your head against a wall. We do not want your towns, he said patiently. Nor your houses, nor your customs, nor your language. We are, he took a deep breath, we are not English. Fitzwilliam's understanding smile had spread across his whole face.
Oh, of course you're not. But that's not your fault. We shall just have to do the best we can.
Hugh stood up. Blood sang in his brain. He watched his own hands lay the book down on the table. He saw them open it and tear out half a dozen pages. He watched his fingers rip the page into tiny shreds and fling them like snowstorms into Fitzwilliam's face.
To hell with your English prayer book, he exploded. And to hell with everything else English too.
And he turned to storm out of the room. Seeger, who had been waiting patiently by the door, grabbed him by the collar and one wrist, jerked his arm up behind his back and twisted him round to face the Lord Deputy. Fitzwilliam stared at him in amazement. Then,
put him back in his cell and let him cool his heels there for a few more days, he ordered the constable. Let us hope it restores him to his senses.
Seeger marched the boy out. Fitzwilliam sat utterly confused, staring at the place where Hugh had stood. What on earth had he said or done to provoke such an outrageous outburst? He wondered whether to ask the Archbishop, but he decided against it. McGrath was Irish himself, and despite his loyalty, wasn't quite to be relied on. Fitzwilliam called his predecessor's assessment of the young O'Donnell.
Well, Sir John, he thought grimly, it seems there is, after all, one point on which we both agree. You can do your best for these barbarians, dress them decently, educate them, give them some civilization, but then, just when you think you have them eating out of your hand, some unpredictable little incident sets them off again, and then straight back to their old savage caveman ways.
He sighed, thinking of the offers he had been made in Donegal and Dungannon, the suggestions, the whispered promises. He had been very tempted, but the risk was simply too great. His duty was clear. No bribes were to be taken. Taking his leave of Archbishop McGrath, Fitzwilliam returned to his private chamber, and the letter he had started to write earlier in the day, the report to Her Majesty's Privy Council. Dipping his pen into the ink, he added one extra careful sentence.
And further I would warn you, he wrote, of the dangers that might grow into this miserable realm by letting loose the harebrained and stupid imp the O'Donnell's son.
That harebrained imp spent another 10 days in the cell beneath the gate tower, reflecting on his poor behaviour. He could have avoided it. "The Lord Deputy is prepared to be forgiving," announced Seagar after the first day. "An apology is all it'll take to unlock the door." But Hugh could not bring himself to give one. What had he to apologize for? Fitzwilliam was the one at fault with his ridiculous ideas about civilization. Did the Lord Deputy really imagine his English manners, his English language, or his ridiculous clothes were things that any normal Irishman would ever want? Did all Saxons hold the same belief? If so, they were even stupider than he thought. Eventually, however, Fitzwilliam decided the boy had been punished enough. He was let out, and Seagar, with many threats of what would happen if he misbehaved again, escorted him back to the gate tower. It was a huge relief. Despite his bravery, Hugh had been growing sick of his own company. He was also spoiling for exercise. Even the small castle yard would seem like freedom after 3 weeks locked in a cell, and he could hardly wait to see Owen and Donal again, tell them about his confrontation with Fitzwilliam and McGrath. Owen especially would enjoy the story. He ran up the gate tower stairs two at a time, leaving Seagar to plod after him. But when he flung open the door of their room, it was neither of his friends who greeted him. Instead, he was met by two other hostages, Hugh O'Toole and Art Kavanagh. He knew both of these young men. Hugh was the brother of Phelim O'Toole of Castle Kevin, and brother-in-law to the notorious Fiach MacHugh. He had been given as a gift when Fiach attended the farewell celebrations of Perrault. In typical fashion, the English had forgotten to release him. Art Kavanagh had come quite recently, as a pledge for one of his kinsmen. He was older than most of the others and already had a reputation as an excellent swordsman. Hugh stared at him. "Where's Owen? Where's Donal?" he demanded. He swung around accusingly at Seagar. "What do you have to do with them?" Seagar smirked. "Oh, they've abandoned you," he said. "They must have grown tired of your company." You didn't understand. Alarming possibilities ran through his mind, but Art Kavanagh reassured him.
"They escaped,"
he explained with a big grin on his face.
"Escaped? How? When?"
"2 days ago. Didn't someone accidentally leave a door unlocked, and they ran through it, and off? Like the Wild Hunt?"
But Hugh's mind reeled. People didn't escape that easily from Dublin Castle. There was more to this than Art was letting on. Money must have changed hands somewhere along the line. And he had a pretty good idea who had been the giver and the taker. "I want to see Owen MacTulo Gallagher," he demanded.
"Do you now?" said the constable. "And who are you to be making demands?"
Nevertheless, the request must have been passed on to the Lord Deputy, for a couple of days later, Hugh was permitted to visit Owen's father. It was a strained meeting. Hugh felt betrayed. Owen MacTulo had been his foster father for several years. He had treated him like his own. How could he now have abandoned him so shamefully? "It wasn't you, was it?" he demanded as soon as they were alone together. "Did you bribe the Lord Deputy for him to turn his back while Owen and Donal escaped?"
"I did," admitted O'Gallagher.
"And you known all the time I was locked away and not able to go with them? Was your purse not big enough for the three of us?"
The older man shook his head.
"Ah, Hugh, do you think we did not try? I, your mother, Hugh MacFerdina, a king's ransom we offered for you. But all is greed. Fitzwilliam's no fool. He knows you're the most valuable hostage he holds. The English queen is cruel, and very unforgiving for those who cross her. What use could your man make of all our gold if he had no head on his shoulders?"
Hugh said nothing. He felt cold and empty, the claws of the Red Queen clutching at his entrails like meat hooks. She could keep him here forever, until he grew old, and weak, and his heart broke, and he died. He wanted to be happy for Owen and Donal, but the sense of abandonment was almost unbearable. It was as though somebody had kicked his feet from under him and left him drowning in a bog. His foster father put strong hands on his shoulders.
"Have faith, son. We're not after deserting you. Hugh MacFerdina has powerful friends.
If he can't buy your freedom, he'll find a way to steal it. And mine too, eventually, please God.
His voice faltered over those last words. Hugh felt a prick of consciousness. In the heat of his own disappointment, he had forgotten that O'Gallagher was also a prisoner.
I'm sorry, he said. I'd no right to say the things I did.
He crossed to the window and looked out at the familiar skyline. The rooftops were grey and wet, but the clouds were thinning, and there was a rainbow in the western sky. He gazed at it. It arched across the heavens, a bright promise stretching from Dublin to Donegal. And somewhere beneath it, Owen and Donal were making their way north to freedom. Hope crept back into his heart.
God guide the journey, he whispered, and smiled at O'Gallagher.